another Friday, and that means another edition of the Zogby Report, real and unscripted. Those of you who have been loyal and following right along know the drill, that I, John, and my son Jeremy take a look at some hot issues in the news or hot issues concerning our future every week and discuss them for 25, 30 minutes or so, oftentimes from different points of view, but always respectful and honorable. Jeremy, how you doing this week?
Hey, happy birthday, Dad.
Oh, yeah, it is. It is a happy one. Your kids called me very, very early, and that makes for the beginnings of a perfect day. Thank you.
Yeah, so let me just point out real quick. Today's your birthday, 9-3, right? Yes. And this is episode 83, which is the year that I was born.
That's
so
right.
That's a great connection there. The episode represents the year I was born. Today is your birthday, and it's in sync, 83 to 93. Well, you can tell that I dive into numbers a little too much.
A little numerology there. And how old am I today, just to keep this going? 73. There you go.
I was going to say it. Oh, wow. Yeah. Wow.
Okay. That ends the numerology portion of our conversation. So let's get right into it. You know what? I'd like to do with two things. One is I would like, obviously, to talk about Afghanistan and talk about it both in its immediate and in its long-term impact on the United States and, let's say, the Biden presidency. And then I would also like to talk about the Biden presidency, all sorts of things going on. His numbers are down, of course. We'll get into that a little later. But you know how things are today. Is this the end of the Biden presidency? Is this a gift of manna from heaven as far as the Republicans are concerned? You know, I'd like to chat about that a bit. But let's get into Afghanistan, okay?
Sure.
And
yeah.
I'll open up and we'll see where this takes us. All right. It's just about 20 years now since the horrible events of 9/11, just about 20 years since we first entered Afghanistan, and now in a very shameful and shameless way, we've ended this war. By the same token, it was a war that, if won at all, and that meant getting Osama bin Laden and putting skids to the Taliban regime so they could no longer protect al-Qaeda, that was, I'm putting this in air quotes, that was won a long time ago. And then we hung on and got into nation building, and that hasn't been working out for us very well over the last 50 years, but, you know, in particular recently. And I would argue I'm among the crowd that says we should have ended this a long time ago. It was a huge mistake to stay. This was never going to end well, and the president ended it. In fact, in many ways, his two predecessors, Barack Obama and Donald Trump, put us on the road to ending our involvement. The current president, Joe Biden, just decided enough is enough. If there is an issue, and there indeed is, it was a poorly executed evacuation. Does this spell the end of his presidency? I don't think so. every major poll today that has some of its sample in September has the president in the 40s. His average is a not very good 45% approval rating, and he is upside down in terms of more disapproving than approving. But 45% is not fatal. It does not spell doom. It will spell doom if his numbers continue. in a downward spiral. And if even if it looks as if he's in a free fall, and I don't think he's there yet, but 45%, given the bad weeks that he's been having and the real shameful display of the evacuation, that does not in any way spell doom for him, nor a gift for the Republicans. I'm going to get into that as we go along, but what do you think initially?
Well, the only thing that I can add to that, a couple things, are it dawned on me last week that this actually isn't a 20-year war. It was a 20-year overt war. But remember, the CIA had had their hands, or you know, their operations going on in Afghanistan throughout the 80s, and to my knowledge, that continued through into the 90s. Of course, why did they start it? Brzezinski and Kissinger had the plan to lure the Soviets into Afghanistan to create their Vietnam, ultimately to bankrupt them. And in that covert war, you had at least 1 million people who had died. And then that, of course, continued into the 90s. So, I mean, I don't know that prior to Brzezinski and Kissinger meddling into the affairs of Afghanistan, that I'm sure it wasn't by any means an exemplary nation. But to my understanding, it was much better off before all of that, being caught up in the chess piece, or the chessboard rather, being a pawn or in the chessboard. And so in essence, this has really been a 40-year war, 20 years of covert operations, 20 years of overt warfare. And so I think that's important, because then when you get to that number of 40 years of meddling into the affairs of this nation, and then you throw on that in that 40 years, there have been millions of deaths, it becomes quite obvious. Was it worth it? It wasn't even close to worth it. So we do have to applaud getting out, but of course, the manner in which it was done was not only chaotic, but quite very troublesome, incredibly troublesome. But what are the larger implications of this? I did a podcast last week with a young gentleman, an entrepreneur in India, and he asked, is this the end of Pax Americana? And, you know, you step back and objectively look at the situation, and this is a flashing signal of the end of Pax Americana. I think it's something that is unavoidable. I think that it's inevitable that it is the end. And one more thing is, immediately, if you notice, after this withdrawal, the Chinese have stated that any naval ship, any non-Chinese naval ship that's going to enter the South China Sea has to register. And of course, this has the intelligence and the Pentagon and leadership in DC foaming at the mouth, because apparently they think that they can just enter into the waters of any territories. And I that just further illustrates what signals the end of Pax Americana. And I'll leave it at that, and I'll turn it back to you.
You know, those are some really good insights, and I just want to build on those before we move beyond Afghanistan. I think we're approaching the end of Pax everyone, meaning Pax world of dominant empires. We've been in this mode for a very long time. The United States has been in this mode, so contrary to how we were born, or at least our values when we were born, as stated. But you know, among the things we have to take into consideration, the United States was born in revolution, and we created our own nation. Canada did the same thing too. These are not nations. You know, let's look at Afghanistan. Afghanistan today is the product of major powers putting together these uncomfortable geographical borders, you know, to serve their interests without really a strong peace agreement or a strong natural affinity of among the people, the tribes on the ground. Iraq, you know, another perfect example. North and South Vietnam, we're going to keep them apart just like we've kept Korea apart, contrary to the will of the majority of the people. The Middle East as well. These are uncomfortable conditions and borders that have been drawn by major powers. And, you know, I think hopefully, even though there's going to be continued pain on the ground in these places, and, you know, in particular, since we're talking about Afghanistan, we've got to get out of this nation building business. And I think in many ways, what Joe Biden has done is declared an end, at least in Afghanistan, to something that was not going to happen, you know, building a strong and democratic Afghanistan. Put the Taliban aside. And if you look at the Northern Alliance and if you look at the other groups, these are not Jeffersonian Democrats. These are warlords and tribes with their own interests, their own leaders. Sadly, a lot of suffering on the ground, but hopefully what we're learning is that those are issues that are going to have to be resolved by the people themselves and not by us. And it's just a sad and sordid chapter in the United States. It'll be less so if we've learned from it. That remains to be seen. So what about the Biden presidency? You know, I'm of the belief, as I just stated, this is hardly the end. You know, if you look at presidents who've had bad numbers, you know, Harry Truman left on a low note. Jimmy Carter certainly did, his numbers plummeting in the 30s. Nixon, 23%, George W. Bush. Now, these were either failed presidencies or presidencies that entered into some sort of a free fall. 45% is not that, at least not at this point. But it does beg the question anyway as to whether Joe can get his mojo back, because what's working for him right now? Not much. Brand new, hot off the press as we speak, jobs report, 235,000 new jobs created, much less than was anticipated. A lot of that due to worries about the spread of COVID. Employers were hoping they'd be able to put people back to work, and it's just not the time. But Biden has a 42% job approval on the economy, 42% on foreign policy, 32% on immigration. He gets 52% on handling COVID, but generally speaking, he's upside down, as we pointed out. He needs a victory, and it's hard right now to see where he gets that victory. The highly anticipated, by Democrats, that is, infrastructure plan is on hold. First of all, the president can't seem to unite his party. Secondly, with his numbers going down, there's little incentive for Mitch McConnell. In fact, to the contrary, there's a lot of incentive for him to block any initiative by the president. And so this is a turning point period for the Biden presidency.
Yeah, I don't think, as you pointed out, that it's the end, because he will always have his base, no matter how disastrous Clinton was throughout his presidency at different times. You know, obviously conservative Democrats, morally conservative Democrats, were disgusted towards the end of his presidency, but they still said, he's our guy and I love him. And it was the same with George W. Bush. It's been the same. This goes back to what I talked about, that political parties have become basically cults, where people are so beholden to them that there's no element of free agency. It's woven into the cultural and the political landscape that we only have two options, and you have to be with one or be with nothing, and it doesn't have to be that way. So what is going to continue for sure, which in my opinion is the end of the Biden administration, is division. There's going to be more intense division. And to be able to maintain 52% or 45% or 43% or even up to, you know, 55%, I don't think is something to pat yourself on the back. We need to get to a point in this country, because for decades we've been basically by and large 50-50. The problem is that it's intensifying. And as we talk about and as I talk about, it's becoming incredibly tribal, where there are these dichotomies, you know, the whites and the non-whites, the Democrats and the Republicans. We've even started to see young versus old, you know, okay, boomer and baby boomers trashing millennials. They need to grow up and have a work ethic. Of course, the most recent one, those who are vaccinated and those who are unvaccinated, and this war going on of, you're killing us, and no, you're killing us. And so President Joe Biden currently is overseeing, definitely in my lifetime, the most divisive political and cultural landscape that I've ever seen. I would argue the most divisive, more than the 60s, probably very much akin to the eve of the Civil War. And that's not me predicting necessarily that there's going to be a civil war, but it's just very sad that in those dichotomies, those opposing groups, very few people in each camp can articulate the stance of the other, whether it's the Democrat or the Republican or the unvaccinated or the vaccinated and everything in between. On either side, nobody can say, well, this is why they believe what they believe. And there's a reason why they believe it. So they've lost empathy. And because they've lost empathy, they don't understand the other. And it is my maxim that the loss of empathy is the road to war. And I'm not saying that translates to Molotov cocktails, but a cultural war, absolutely. Could it spiral out of control? It could. Don't kid yourself that it couldn't. But the reason why I'm talking about this is because Joe Biden is overseeing this. And everything aside, Donald Trump and Barack Obama and George W. Bush, none of that means anything, okay? Because right now Joe Biden is in control, and he's at the command, he's at the steering wheel. And the question is he going to unify? Is he going to stop this overboiling of rage and anger by toning down the rhetoric and stopping the inflammatory language and stop blaming the other side and say, enough is enough. We have to begin to understand each other. And if we don't, what comes, none of us are ready for. And the fact that he's not doing that right now, and he hasn't done that, to me marks the end of his presidency, that he will continue division and that he will make it worse, unless he stops it right now.
Okay, so that's where I'm going to disagree, because I think that he has empathy in his personality and his life. I think that fundamentally he sees himself as a bridge builder and a healer. But I also see where he has little incentive to do that. That because the divisions are so strong, that any move to build bridges or to try to draw some Republicans to his agenda are thwarted by the sentiments of the other party and by the progressives in his own party. I mean, take this infrastructure bill, for example. After painful negotiations, some Republicans have signed on to a more limited, let's call it hard infrastructure bill. It then goes back to the House, and Nancy Pelosi, bending to progressives, says, okay, but we're not going to pass this version of the hard infrastructure bill unless we pass the soft infrastructure bill for $3 trillion. And that then prompts Republicans, both in the House and in the Senate, to say, all right, then we're not going to pass either. Now, that's in nobody's interest. I mean, everybody agrees something has to be done about hard infrastructure in this country. Look at what's just happened with Hurricane Ida. Bridges falling apart and roads being destroyed and people actually dying as a result. But, you know, sadly, what you are saying is not only that, as in the past, we have disagreements over how to interpret the Constitution. I think what we're finding today is a rejection of the Constitution, that if it doesn't work for me, then I don't subscribe to it. And if that's the case, then we've lost the basis for any kind of consensus. Whether the Constitution is good, I think it is, but needs to be updated, or bad, as some do, especially when it doesn't play out in their favor. Fact of the matter is we don't have a core of beliefs or a core of a structure anymore that gives an incentive for people to bind these wounds. And the only other time in our history that we've been there, as you pointed out many, many times before on this podcast and elsewhere, is the lead up to the Civil War. And that is troubling. But I don't blame it on Biden. In fact, frankly, and I know that Lincoln is not one of your heroes, but Lincoln's actions were very similar in many ways. He tilted in a very partisan direction to the point where the South did secede, and it was very hard to bring the South back into the fold. But Lincoln was a partisan president until a few days before he was shot. In Biden's instance, sadly, I think he's trying. I think he's trying to bind, and I don't think there's any basis for that.
Well, I mean, what you just described to me sounds like agenda in politics over people. And I know you talked about an infrastructure bill to help people, right? Mm-hmm. But I've already outlined this unbelievable, uncanny divide that we have that cannot continue. And I would argue that is priority number one. There will be a breaking point. This can't continue. I would be very shocked if we can go another presidency or two as things are. But as long as, you know, the ground game and pushing through the agenda and politics remains paramount at a very sticky situation, a very dangerous situation that we're in, it's only going to ensure that the rage will boil over. And so, to me, there are brands, right? And there are words and there are actions. And yeah, I mean, Biden's brand is, you know, built in many ways on a similar brand that former President Obama projected. But then you look at actual things he says, and then you take it a next step and you look at the things that he does, and you, either way you slice it, I mean, you can believe that he's a bridge builder, but his actions really say otherwise. And so I think he needs to take it to the next step. And, you know, maybe he needs to do a combination of a listening tour and a tour of bringing people together. But that's not going to happen. And that's all the more reason to believe that he will continue to be a divisive president.
I think the listening tour idea is a very good idea. My fear is that it will be hijacked by the extremes, which will just blow it up. As you've pointed out, people will hear only what they want to hear, say what they want to say, and twist what they want to twist. But it's probably still a good idea to try to get back to basics and to be proactive. Jer?
Yeah, I mean, let's not forget about the leadership particularly Silicon Valley. And now, of course, there's the whole question over whether what they are doing is censorship or not. Of course, we know that the First Amendment it bars Congress from passing any law. And so, you know, what does Twitter and Facebook and those companies have to do with Congress? Well, other people say, well, you know, they kind of work in tandem, especially around elections. And so it's almost like they've become extensions of the government. Well, you know, that aside, whether it's constitutional or unconstitutional, the fact is that these platforms have only played into the rage by shutting out indiscriminately. On one side, if it's on the right, it's hateful speech. But if it's on the left, remember the example of the New York Times journalist, I forget her name, a young Asian American woman who was on Twitter, had just been hired by the New York Times, and said, hey, you know, on the subway, I look at old white men with my eyes, I think about how they should be hurt. Well, that's hate speech, okay? But, you know, if it's okay on the it's okay on the left, but on the right, it's hateful. And so the leadership in these kind of platforms don't really help. But put that aside, and let's focus on Joe Biden. I'm reminded of the example of JFK when he was campaigning to win the Democratic nomination in 1960. And, of course, the big deal was the fear of a Catholic president. I mean, it's hard to imagine in 2021, right, where we've gone to the next Uber level of division. But back in 1960, it was a big deal that we could have the prospects of a Catholic president. And of course, Protestants, many of them thought that, oh, well, you know, he'll have more loyalty to the Pope and to the Vatican than he will to the Constitution. And so JFK went into West Virginia, which was only 3% Catholic. And he was doing his ground game, and he was advised to not touch on the issue head on, but he ultimately determined to grab the bull by the horn and to take the issue head on. And he was speaking before crowds, and he said, you know, when my brother Joe went out for his last flight in World War II, nobody ever cared about whether he was Protestant or Catholic. And of course, when I was fighting in World War II, nobody ever asked me about whether I was Protestant or Catholic. In other words, he was a major unifying figure in West Virginia, of all states, with 3% Catholic. So that shows the incredible capacity of leadership and unity that JFK possessed. And to say that we can't do that, we can't recreate that, you have to take it head on. And so I don't think we should excuse, well, you know, Biden's going to upset the progressive wing and this and that, and he won't be able to get his infrastructure bill. That just proves politics over people, and that's exactly what we need to avoid. And I think if JFK can do it, I think Joe Biden can do it. The question is whether he wants to. And of course, JFK went on to win West Virginia with 65%.
That's a longer conversation. And as we hit the 30-minute mark, probably too long for us to get into right now. But let's put it on hold and pick up next week where we left off. Sound good?
It does. That sounds good. And happy birthday, and I look forward to giving you a gift later.
Oh, I look forward to receiving. Take care. Bye-bye.